Hello everyone and welcome to Science Spinning, the show with its own Irish spin on science with me, Sean Duke, here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Today we'll be talking to an Irish marine researcher based at NUI Galway, Patrick Collins, who's involved in a new international project, which also involves a National Geographic filming team, to find out exactly what new life forms might exist in our offshore waters. In the second part of the show, we'll be talking about a remarkable new microchip sensor that's being developed here in Ireland in Cork that can pick up irregular breathing patterns in infants and adults without even the need to touch the skin. It's thought that this could help prevent sudden infant death syndrome and also prevent deaths at the wheel when drivers unfortunately fall asleep. But first up, we're going to be talking to Patrick Collins. He's based at NUI Galway and hopefully have Patrick on the line. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Maybe tell us, give us the background for our listeners. Tell us what this project is all about.
What we're doing, we're looking outside Irish territorial waters. We're going out to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
Okay, even beyond Irish waters. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's completely unexplored. The British went out there about 2 years ago and mapped the area and found these plumes, which indicate that we might have a large vent system down there.
Now, vent system, just for our listeners, some may know, some may not know, but we're talking about an area that actually is volcanic, isn't it? There's two pieces of the crust of the Earth's crust moving apart, so there's volcanic material coming up.
There is indeed. What happens is the seawater percolates through the rock, hits the hot magma underneath, gets superheated, dissolves a lot of sulfides and metals and, you know, iron, gold, copper and all that, comes up through fissures in the rock, is cooled down by the seawater, and forms these large chimneys. Now, these chimneys issue out, the water then gets cooled, you know, so you get either black smokers or white smokers, which is the liquid coming out of them. And that's full of hydrogen sulfide and methane, and that fuels this whole ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Now, these the life forms that you may find there, obviously the sun's rays can't get down that far, so it's kind of different forms of life may exist than exist on the surface.
Oh, completely, completely. The rest of the planet is usually fueled by photosynthetic energy.
That's from the sun,
obviously. The sunlight, you know, for grass and leaves are eaten by cows and then we eat the cows. The energy in this ecosystem is from the Earth's core. It's from hydrogen sulfide and methane. It's a chemosynthetic as opposed to photosynthetic, so that is, it's a chemical-based system.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't expect there to be a lot of life down there, but there's vast, vast, vast amounts of life. They're like these harbour with some of the highest densities of biological matter on the planet.
Sure. Now, I know one of your colleagues, I think it was Anthony Grehan, he got a lot of publicity there not so long ago because the submersible of the Marine Institute went down, discovered new species. So that may indicate you might find all kinds of creatures there that weren't...
What we believe this to be is a new biogeographic region.
Yeah.
It means all the animals we find, we hope, will be brand new to science. We expect them to be new to science.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be lots of new stuff.
That's kind of exciting, isn't it for a marine biologist like yourself?
Yeah. Well, when you do the deep water work, generally you expect to find new animals almost every dive.
Mm.
But with this being a brand new area that's never been discovered, we expect to find everything should be new.
Okay, now it's about 3,000 meters below sea level, isn't it?
Yep.
The area that, so this particular area that you're going after, then how did you target in on this area? It's an area of 2 kilometers by 2 kilometers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I said a few years ago, the British found evidence of a plume, which is the hot water that comes off the vents. They found it by surveying the area, and they did a bit of mapping in the area, so they have found evidence that it's there. But they didn't look in detail. They didn't have the facilities we have, like the Holland 1 ROV from the Marine Institute. So we're going to send that down. So
okay, now maybe tell people about the Holland submersible. This is a new thing in Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, it was bought during the days of the Celtic Tiger, and it really is one of the top machines on the planet. This is the reason why the National Geographic are getting involved, and the NOC in Southampton are getting involved. We have high-definition cameras on board, so we can take really top-quality images.
Fantastic. This is state-of-the-art stuff, then, and presumably there's no human goes down.
God, no.
It's controlled from a boat above?
It's controlled from there. We'll be taking the Celtic Explorer out, and we've got a good crew based in Galway who'll be controlling the ROV.
Okay. Tell us about the National Geographic connection, because obviously if they're involved, they think this is going to be a really exciting mission.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're putting together a documentary on the deep sea. And, this is going to be big stuff, because this is a brand new find, and it's not every day you find a whole new world. So they're quite keen to get involved in that.
Now, you could, I presume, find lots of small organisms, microbacteria, maybe new fish. Could you find larger animals, maybe, well, an octopus or a shark or something?
Well, I'm down there as a kind of macrobiologist, so I fully expect to find lots of big animals.
Yeah.
We're going to take samples for the Biodiscovery program in Ireland as well, so, you know, we'll be looking at these animals in terms of cancer drugs and the like. But, no, the animals you find on these vents are generally larger than normal. Like you can get mussels, which are the length of your forearm. Your average snail down there, for the deep sea, is quite a tiny animal.
Mm.
Around the vents, the snails are the size of your fist, if not larger.
And how come they're so big there?
It's a huge energy source.
Right.
The fluids coming out of the vents is just full of food. And the bacteria utilize this to create food. And then the animals either graze on the bacteria, or they form associations called symbiosis with these bacteria. And this allows the animals to grow quite large. And to have, you know, lots of them.
Okay. Now, 3,000 meters, I mean, that's quite far down. In feet, that's what, about 5,000 feet or something. But is there not a great weight of pressure that weighs down on the animals? I mean, how do they survive all that pressure
of
water?
They're used to it. They're born there. They've evolved to take that.
Okay.
And plus, you have to understand that water can't be very easily compressed.
So it's not And the other thing, I guess, is it very dark down there? How do they see where they're going?
That's a good question. There's no light down there from the sun, but the vents themselves do give out some, I think, infrared radiation, so they can detect that. So some of them do have eyes. And there's also a lot of biological light down there from animals that emit light.
Mm-hmm.
Either as a defense. Like, we were just out on the canyons was it a week and a half ago on the Explorer, and we brought up some corals, and I took them into the fridge, and you shake them, and they glow bright blue. So an awful lot of the animals down there do glow in the dark anyway.
Okay, I'll ask you the question I ask a lot of scientists. Now, a lot of the money, obviously, is coming from the Irish taxpayer, or it did when things were a bit better for the exploration machine, etc. What's the benefit, if there is any, potentially, for the average Irish man or woman in the street?
I think there's a few. I think this is a large international project, and because it's going to be, they're making a National Geographic documentary on it, it'll be seen all over the world. So this is a good way of, you know, promoting Ireland in a positive light again.
Yes.
And, you know, Ireland built its name before on our high-tech industry, and it's been a little bit tarnished. So this will show the world again that we are capable of doing, you know, really cutting-edge stuff.
And in the marine area, we have been, in recent years, right out at the front, haven't we, in terms of surveying our waters? And
Yep. We've got fantastic equipment and some really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be promoted as well, because that will bring money into the country in terms of external grants and stuff.
Okay, and aside from yourself and National University Ireland, Galway, are there any other Irish people directly involved?
There's Andy Wheeler, Dr. Andy Wheeler down in Cork, who's, I'm not sure if you've heard of him, he's a very fine deepwater coral.
Yeah, he studies the cold water corals, isn't it?
He does. And then there's Jens Carlson, who's another youth. There's a lot of people from UCC.
Mm-hmm.
There's Jens Carlson, who's a geneticist who I worked with over at Duke University in the US. He's going to look at population genetics. We've got John Benzie,
mm-hmm.
who's another microbiologist coming on board. And I think there's a few students coming with us as well.
Is it all to do with biology, or is there any other aspects, geology as well?
Yeah. There's a huge geological team going. It's about half and half in terms of geologists and biologists.
So what are they interested in, the geology people?
Oh, God knows, rocks.
Rocks, yeah. Well, I suppose they're looking at this mid-Atlantic ridge, maybe like they've never seen it before.
Well, this area hasn't been mapped or surveyed before.
Yeah.
We are bringing a guy over from NOC, Bramley Merton, who is one of the greatest in the world.
NOC being?
The National Oceanographic Centre in Southampton.
Okay.
He really is a big cheese in the global scene.
Okay, now you're running a bit of a competition as well, so maybe tell us about that, about naming one of the creatures.
Yeah, we're trying to raise awareness of this sort of science in Ireland, so... the idea is that the students, or not students, could be scout groups or anyone who really wants to.
Young people,
young
I guess.
People, yeah. Or young at heart people. Anyone,
yeah.
Really.
Anyone at all, okay.
They come up with an animal, an imaginary beast that would live at the hydrothermal vents. They draw a picture, and mm-hmm. they give us a little description of its life history. And then we'll go through them, and whoever we kind of find is the most interesting and the best one, or the most original, we'll then try and name a new species after the winner.
So your imagination can run riot.
Oh, completely.
And sometimes the what you find down there can be quite weird, can't it, at those depths?
Sometimes it's surreal, absolutely surreal.
Can you give us an example of a, you know, something that's been found at those kind of depths?
These worms down there, which I found one recently in Papua New Guinea, and it lived in a tube 3 or 4 meters long, about looked like a piece of bamboo, quite thick. It has no mouth, no guts, and it mines little sulfides that live in the sediment.
Right.
And it's huge, right. But weird. Looks like a flower, but it's a worm.
And you get things like deep water sharks, don't you?
Them they're not really part of the vent community, but they kind of hover around, kind of munching off the little chaps that fall off.
Right. And when are we likely to see this National Geographic documentary? Will that be anytime soon?
That'll be on air in about a year's time. They have to take all the data that the scientists take and process that to create something, you know, that's for the viewer.
Okay, well, hopefully yourself and all the Irish people on board will feature strongly in that.
Oh, yeah.
and we'll be looking forward to it. And thanks for coming on today to tell us about that. That's Patrick Collins. He's a biologist based at NUI Galway. He was telling us about an international mission into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to map and discover new species that have never been discovered before. And that's going to be done with an Irish vessel and an Irish submersible craft at the forefront of it. Okay, now before we talk to our next guest, just an item of news that caught my attention. For those of you that are interested in space and space exploration, well, this week the Europe and the Americans are considering what is the next step in space exploration in terms of spaceships. What will we build next? Of course, the shuttle now is more or less decommissioned, and there is a craft, a cargo ship actually, that's called an ATV, which is essentially a freight ship that Europe built that goes up and down. Well, it doesn't go down, it goes up to the International Space Station. It brings water, it brings all the other things, that food, equipment that the astronauts need up there. That obviously we need to move on from that, and we need to build a new type of craft. This is a freight vehicle. This freight vehicle, just as I was saying, brings material up to the space station. The International Space Station, of course, is going to be a platform for hopefully moving out into the next stage of space exploration. The idea is that they're going to build a new craft there that may be able to explore, go out to Mars perhaps, the advantage being that you're already in low orbit at that particular point. Right, we're going to move on now. We're just having a problem getting a phone number organised. Now we're going to talk about a new invention, actually, just while we're trying to key up at the Tyndall National Institute in Cork. The Tyndall National Institute in University College Cork. There's a lecturer there called Domenico Zito. He's developed, as I was saying earlier, he's developed this microchip sensor. We're just trying to get him on the line. And the thing about this microchip sensor is that it can actually detect a person's respiratory rate without any contact with the actual skin. The reason that this is important is because it could be placed in a baby's room, for example, without having to be in the cot itself at all. And it could actually pick up the breathing of babies in these cot beds. If there was anything strange about the breathing, it would set off an alarm. The parents would be alerted, and hopefully the child would be saved. Also, for things like driving, where you have drivers that are driving long distances, occasionally accidents can happen when somebody falls asleep at the wheel. So this is something that could actually be installed in the truck to alert the driver if he actually, his breathing would change as he was falling asleep, and give him an alert there. So this is wide applications. There are other applications as well. The other main application would be in the whole area of people, elderly people, perhaps in the home, where they want to keep check to make sure that they're okay. This device could be used for those people. It could detect again if there's any irregular breathing patterns. If there was an irregular breathing pattern, they could be then linked to the local GP. The local GP would be alerted and hopefully get there in time if somebody was in trouble and they needed help. It's essentially a microchip. Now, it's been developed at this institute called the Tyndall National Institute, based in Cork. It's actually an institute that has 500 researchers in it, so it's an extremely large institute. Works in the area of microchips, works in telecommunications and all kinds of areas, and it's one of the leading institutes in the world actually in this particular field, and it's based here in Ireland. The way the device actually works, it works via a radar. It sends out a radar on a very wide band to when it's in the room, say with to do with the example I mentioned with the child, then it will actually impact on the child's chest. It'll detect the breathing patterns because it's that specific. Even if they're tiny breathing movements, it manages to detect those, and it can bounce back then and get a reading. And that is basically how it works. But I'm not the person who invented this, of course, and hopefully I finally now have on the line the person that really should be talking about it. He's Dr. Domenico Zito at the Tyndall National Institute. Domenico, do I have you there?
Hello, good afternoon.
Okay, thank you. We just had a problem there trying to get you, but no problem, you're here now. So we're just talking about this microchip device. I've told the listeners the basic premise for it, but it has a lot of applications, doesn't it? It's to detect basically irregular breathing, as I understand it.
Yes, that's true. So it's a radar device. It's the first time that such a device is a ultra-wideband pulse radar is implemented on silicon. In terms of application, this device is able to detect very tiny movements, so I mean below 1 centimeter. And one of the applications is the detection of the respiration rate without any contact with people.
Okay, so people that have small children or have had small children know that they, you know, you can put a detector and listen
exactly
to if they're crying or something like that. But of course, the big worry for parents is that the child may suddenly pass away, this sudden infant death syndrome, and the devices that we have now won't be able to pick that up, but this will.
Yes, so there are several studies in the literature which say that the use of radar, so the detection of this respiration rate, is fundamental to prevent to raise a warning in case of obstructive apnea, as in the case of seized. The sudden infant death syndrome. Yeah.
Now, apnea, that's something that happens in adults, isn't it? So maybe just explain what that is.
It's a momentary stopping of breathing, and it happens also in adult people. So one of the challenges across over the whole world to detect in a continuous way the respiration and cardiac activity of people during sleeping and whatever. Do you imagine during the night, so the approach with contact technology is the existing one, so the traditional one, which require wires, electrodes, so it's not something which is really feasible. And what is important that also from the medical perspective, so we work together with medical staff and bioengineers. So there are many aspects which need to be clarified still.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to our continuous monitoring, the doctors will be able to understand more about the diseases, respiratory diseases.
So you could actually, if somebody had a problem with sleep apnea, the doctor could say, listen, if you use this sensor device, then we can track your breathing throughout the night and find out more about what the problem is.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the interesting things also in this space is it's possible to correlate the disease with other, because what the doctor expects that there is not only one cause, one aspect which causes this, but it's a series of aspects. So it's possible to correlate this with other pathologies.
Okay. Now, you're at the stage where you've developed this sensor. So how far away are you from developing it into a product?
So the technology is major.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's new, of course.
Yes, it's the first time, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, mm-hmm. is the first time that this happened. Actually, this was presented at an annual conference running in U.S., which is International Solid State Circuit Conference, and this was presented this year as a technology, new technology for health. The technology is measured. So what we do, we are microelectronic engineers. We designed this chip. We tested the chip also in an application scenario. So we were mm-hmm. able to detect the respiratory rate of people. And now the next step is the clinical validation. But before we proceed for the clinical validation, there is we need to make this sensor completely suitable for to be interfaced with a traditional computer or whatever.
Okay, so let's imagine a situation where you have your product developed and there's parents in the house and they have a baby sleeping upstairs. So how will it actually alert the parents if there's a problem?
This will be depends on the specific scenario. For instance, they will be able to, according to the medical people, they is able to detect when there is a critical stage.
Okay.
So the sensor will have also a logic, and he will be able to raise a warning when it's the case to do it.
Okay, so the warning, or will that be via a computer downstairs? Or
but can be even through your mobile phone.
Mobile phone, even better, I would imagine, yes.
Yes, so because you have always with you. And
yes.
So what we are assisting now is that essentially we are going for a rapid integration of new function in our mobile phones. So they will not be our mobile phone as we perceived in the last year, but they will be our personal server, and we will do a lot of things with that.
Okay, so it's absolutely guaranteed then that, you know, so you could be in the garden with your mobile phone and you would still get the alert. No, you could be sure that it comes through if there's a problem.
Exactly. So what we can assure is the role of the capability of the technology, but how the people we use the technology is still a personal approach.
Mm-hmm.
So we expect that when the technology provides the tool to do something, people is taking care of checking that.
And also with drivers falling asleep at the wheel, that's a big application. And obviously maybe for monitoring people in the home, elderly people or people that have medical problems with their breathing, their areas too?
Correct. It's a big, big interest from European Union. They are funding a lot of project in this area to reduce the risks of social exclusion in the case of sanitary of health detection. In the case of the respiratory rate detection.
Sure.
And essentially because having people in the hospital is a huge cost for the health service.
Sure. So,
the idea to leave people at home, and it's not only a question of money, but there is also a question of feelings, so they can live in their own environment. And the sensor can send the data to the doctor.
Yeah.
For the same for the detection of the classification of the wake sleep of drivers. It has been proved that the detection of respiratory rate associated with the detection of the cardiac activity are enough to classify if the driver is going to sleep. And obviously this is one of the most important reasons which cause accident, unfortunately.
And what would you do there? I mean, obviously you need something very, very quick that's going to waken them up.
Essentially, the study is published by our researchers in over the whole Europe. They are able to predict that the people is going to sleep. So, and again, another warning, which can say to the driver, listen, it's time to stop and take a break.
Okay. Well, it's great to hear that such things are being developed in Ireland. And will it be, you know, will this product be made in Cork, in Ireland? Will it be manufactured there, or what's the plan?
The technology we use is the most advanced technology existing over the whole world. And this technology is available just for commercial products in a few places in the world. We are using for the implementation of this microchip a foundry, a European foundry. But in principle, we could be even able to design this in our fab in the future. Not at the moment, because it's just for experiment. Our fab is mainly focused for other technologies and our other sky. But in principle, we will be able to do this in the future, in a short future.
Okay, we've just run out of time, but thank you very much for telling us about that that excellent invention. Researcher there, Dr. Domenico Zito, he's based in Cork at the Tyndall National Institute, something that could help us prevent sudden infant death syndrome, deaths at the wheel from people falling asleep, etc. Okay, just time to say, if you wish to look up some of the podcasts of previous shows, they're now available at seanduke.com. That's SEANDUKE.com. There's 65, I believe, podcasts that are now available up there, and lots of other material if you're interested in what's happening in science here in Ireland and around the world, and they're searchable by topic or by name. So check that out, seanduke.com. And meanwhile, thanks for listening, and talk to you again next week.